T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Ariel Helwani is easy to pick out. He is one of the best covering UFC as a sport, whether it be the overall everything under the umbrella or a specific fight or fighter. He is one of the best. He's good enough to join us here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Ariel, thank you very much for joining us here. We really appreciate it. We're not going to put you in a position where you need to defend the sport that you cover, but I do have to ask, with what feels in a very accusatory opening question, what the hell seems to be wrong with Dana White? Why is the information that the rest of the world has not getting through to him?
Well, first off, thank you for having me on. I was about to say thank you for not making me defend the actions of someone else, especially Dana White. And then you essentially made me defend the actions of Dana White. So,
welcome to the show. We want to make you as comfortable as possible.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I feel like I continue to be put in this position, but I understand. Here we are in a spot where Dana White is hell bent on moving forward with this event, and you know it's a very conflicting feeling for me, because if you look at the world, if you look at everyone around us, if you look at what every single government and health official is saying, if you just kind of read what they're saying, you would come to the conclusion that this event and either, you know, the subsequent events should not be happening. But he feels like it's something that should be happening. And he's saying in kind of vague terms that, you know, they're doing all the things that need to be done. They're taking the precautions. I feel for the fighters. The fighters don't make money if they don't fight. So I understand where they're coming from as well. But I have a hard time coming to the conclusion that the UFC is above all of this. Like, if all the other sports have to shut down, why should they be the ones to forge on, especially when you're talking about, you know, a contact sport? So yeah, it's a, trust me, I'm thinking the same things that you guys are.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I just have my one quick follow-up question. Is, I've always thought of Dana White as an incredibly savvy, forward-thinking media manipulator. Like, I've never been unimpressed by him right up until now. Is he just trying to do the bidding of, let's just say, someone who might spend too much time in a tanning booth because they're personal friends? Explain to me where his motivations are coming from outside of, well, sports is a empty vacuum and I can step into that void and get all the attention.
Yeah, you know, there's no doubt that there's ego involved here. There's no doubt that they want to be the ones to say, you know, we're the first ones to put on a live sporting event and we're going to get this this train rolling along. And I do think that there's money involved as well. You know, when the UFC was sold in 2016 for $4.025 billion with a B, you know, no one showed up with a check for $4.025 billion, which means, you know, there's a lot of financing involved in this. Basically, like, you know, mortgage payments, right? Interest payments, if you will. And going on hiatus for multiple months, I don't think is really in the cards for them. So that's why you're seeing them, you know, do whatever they can possible to try to keep the train rolling along. And, you know, you mentioned the president, they are friends. And I'm sure that there's a part of that involved as well. You know, there's conversations happening between them. Dana has alluded to these conversations as well. So, yeah, it's look, Dana has always marched to the beat of his own drum. He's always been this defined character. Lord knows, you know, we haven't always seen eye to eye. And this is one of those things where, again, you look around at every other sporting organization on the planet, including other fight promoters in the boxing and MMA world. They've all said, you know, no mas. They've all said, we don't feel comfortable doing this. And, you know, the UFC is saying that they do feel comfortable doing it. And what's a little weird about it is we're going back to the mid-90s where the UFC was literally running away from government regulation and holding events on unsanctioned territories. That's what they're doing now. And that seems to be a bit of a strange move considering how far the sport has come in the last 25 years.
How much of this, and I realize this is a speculative question, but I'll ask it anyway. How much of this is him basically saying, I will do this, and how much of it is him saying, let me see if I can do this as sort of a trial balloon to see if he can do more? It's almost like baseball trotted out their bizarre Arizona scheme, largely, I think, to see if people would salute it. And it seems like this is the same thing. Or is he hell-bent on doing more and more shows, not just because the money nut has to be dealt with, but because he wants to be the guy who said, see, I defied the doctors?
Yeah, I don't know if it's about the doctors per se, but I definitely think it's, hey, I'm the one who was able to get this going first. You know, the way he talks about this, it's almost like a personal for him that he's, you know, he's up for it and he's the one that's going to be able, like the way he talks about, you know, we've had obstacles. It's like trying to put on a John Jones fight when he fails a drug test. And obviously this is a lot bigger than that. This is unlike anything any of us have ever seen. But what they are planning on doing, you know, the island stuff is a lot of self-promotion. You know, everyone that I've talked to as of right now has not heard anything about this. This is the first time they heard about any of that when he came out and said it yesterday. And so we'll see how that develops. That's going to take some time. But what they are close to finalizing is the location on the West Coast, probably in California, what I'm hearing, close to Fresno, so not too far from you guys if my geography is correct. And they're basically going to turn that into like a makeshift UFC headquarters where they will hold multiple events there and it will just be theirs. So they have an event on April 18th, the 25th, the 2nd, the 9th. They're just going to use that facility to hold all these events. Now, there's a lot of challenges and obstacles that come with that because not only are you holding the events, you're asking fighters to then go train for these events, and there's dangers involved in that. And it's somewhat reckless as well. And then once they get to the location, God forbid someone gets sick. I mean, it's just a massive can of worms, unlike anything we've ever seen. But that's what they're planning. That's like the new news. That's the actual news that they are close to finalizing this location on the West Coast that they will hold multiple events at.
When we talk about other sports commissioners, Ariel, we a lot of times make the point that more than decision makers, they are mouthpieces for ownership, where the real money is, and therefore the real decision-making power. I'm just curious. I don't know as much about the structure of UFC decision-making. Is Dana really the driver of this bus entirely, or are there guys in the shadows with a lot more clout that he is sort of just speaking for?
Well, it's important to make the distinction that Dana isn't a commissioner. Dana is just an owner. He's no different than Joe Lacom or Jerry Jones or James Dolan. He's just a guy who owns an organization. He doesn't oversee the sport, so he's always going to do what's best, at least in his opinion, for himself and the UFC. Now, the UFC's principal owners are Endeavor, formerly known as WME, William Morris Endeavor, and their co-chairmans are Ari Emanuel and Patrick Whitesell. So if there's anyone who's going to be kind of above Dana, so to speak, it's those two. But Dana is the face of the organization, and in many respects, you know, the buck stops with him. You know, they kind of weigh in here and there, but the day-to-day stuff is all him. Now, back in the day, he had the two Fertitta brothers, Lorenzo and Frank Fertitta, who were the majority owners of the UFC, and they were savvy businessmen. They owned the Station Casinos, among many other things, in Nevada. They no longer own the company because they sold it back in 2016, as I said earlier. So now it's on to him, and he's got other people there. But really, a lot of this, like, he is the driving force. If he for some reason would have said, you know, we're not doing this, they're not doing it. And you can see, like, he's been the guy going out there and saying that we're going to forge on and we're going to do this and we're going to prove everyone wrong and all this stuff. And a lot of the rhetoric is similar to what we're hearing, you know, in Washington about, you know, attacking the media and saying that we're wimps for suggesting that this shouldn't happen. And that's just kind of the way he's always been. Now it's just being magnified a little more because as of right this moment, they're the only game in town.
Ariel Helwani covers the UFC for ESPN. Good enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. And there's an awful lot of urgency that needs to be attached to any fight that is going to be taking a week, taking place a week from Sunday, especially if you build all the infrastructure around it. For a guy who's got it all figured it out, he's not sharing any specifics as to the location of the island, the amount of testing that will be available. He didn't go into details about athletes all getting tested for COVID-19. It's amazing how no details seem to be shared with anyone that has a bright idea of how quickly this is all going to be easily taken care of.
Yeah, well, it's not just not sharing it with us. It's not sharing it with the fighters. Like, none of the fighters have their flights booked. None of them know where it's happening. None of them or the representation know anything about the location. And as you said, we're approaching, it would be on Saturday, April 18th. So we're approaching a week and a half away. And to be clear, the April 18th show is not the island show. The April 18th show would be the show in California somewhere, probably on a tribal land, to where they can just not have to adhere to any of the rules of the state athletic commissions. For example, if they would want to hold an event at, say, the Chase Center or the Staples Center or the Barclays Center, MSG, they would have to adhere to the rules and regulations of the state athletic commissions, New York State, California State, et cetera. But if they go to a tribal land, which kind of, you know, goes by the rules of the tribal land, they don't have to follow those rules. Now, this creates a very controversial set of circumstances because UFC hasn't done something like this, like I said, since the 90s when they were being banned left and right by all these states.
I mean, isn't that enough red flags for people right there? Like, the only way we can do this is if we go somewhere where laws do not apply.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. I feel the same way. And it's weird because our sport has come a very long way in a very short amount of time. And, you know, now the sport is on ESPN and it's getting mainstream coverage. You know, 10 years ago, no one was covering MMA, certainly not making like a full-time living doing it. We're still in the embryonic stages of this sport. And there's a lot of people who are saying, like, wait a second, we're literally going back to the first year, like when they were running away. There was an event in 1997 scheduled to have a UFC 12 in Buffalo, New York. 2 days before the event, the New York State Athletic Commission banned the UFC from being there. And so they then moved it to Oregon. And then the Oregon State Athletic Commission banned it. Then they held the event on hours' notice in Dothan, Alabama, 200 miles away from Birmingham, Alabama. That's what we're doing now. Like, that's what we've become. And there's a lot of people who cover the sport and who are around the sport who are saying maybe this isn't the best look.
The California event, even if they find a tribal land where this might work, aren't they still subject to sort of to directives from the governor? And wouldn't this fly sort of in the face of everything the governor has sort of put into place in terms of shelter in place, in terms of quarantine? How do they get around that?
So that's where things get really interesting. So I reached out to the California State Athletic Commission, who, in my opinion, are the gold standard as far as combat regulation are concerned. Andy Foster, their executive director, is phenomenal at his job. And right now, they're saying that this is above their pay grade. To your point, this is now, you know, a governor issue, right? This is not like an MMA/boxing issue. This is about, you know, lockdowns and rules and regulations regarding leaving your house and whatnot. And honestly, I don't know the answer to that question. This is all very strange because California isn't overseeing it. So they're not, you know, answering any questions. And when I say California, I mean the California State Athletic Commission. They're not answering any questions about it because it's not their event. So it's going to be really interesting. Now, I'm not an expert when it comes to tribal lands, but I do know that when you hold an event on a tribal land, either you're adhering to their own rules and regulations or you self-regulate. And this particular land that I'm hearing that they're going to, which is around 20 miles or so from Fresno, they don't have a commission attached to them. They don't have any sort of governing body. So the UFC would basically like regulate themselves. And as far as like people leaving and what you're saying, you know, non-essential work and whatnot, how do they get around that? I have no idea. I don't even know if they know. And that's probably why they're not telling anyone where this is.
This is, as I understand, going to be a pay-per-view event. Has there been any discussion about just the fact that, you know, the disposable income is being stripped from people all over the country? Is there concern about how that could affect pay-per-view buys, or do they expect that the sort of only game in town aspect gives them an edge?
So a reporter asked Dana White this question a couple of days ago. Just for the record, Dana doesn't talk to me, and that's a whole other set of worms.
Right.
So, you know, so I'm having to answer a lot of questions for his mindset when I don't have access to the man because he doesn't like me. So I just want to make that very clear. But he did.
Wait, seriously, he doesn't talk to you? He won't grant you an interview, and you're one of the foremost people covering the sport?
No, he doesn't talk to me. He has me blocked on every form of social media. So you can understand the awkwardness of trying to defend his actions here because the man doesn't like me. And it's well documented, you know, the things that he's done to me and trying to ruin my career. So, you know, that is what it is. I try to keep it all straight and be as unbiased as possible. And I feel for the fighters in this case because I respect them greatly. To me, I'm able to separate the two. But to answer your question, someone did ask him, and he said, you know, we've gone through so many hoops to try to make this happen. It's obviously a huge expense that we can't afford to give it away for free. I had suggested, you know, if they would put this on free television, whether it's ESPN or ABC, could you imagine all the people that would watch it? And there are other people who are saying to me, like, oh, these pay-per-view buys are going to be through the roof because no one else has anything to do. And I would strongly argue against that for two reasons. Number one, just yesterday there was a concert that was announced that's going to be like having Paul McCartney and Lady Gaga and all these famous people, Stevie Wonder, on the same night. So the idea that there's nothing going on goes out the window. Then you can say, all right, MMA fans, that's not their demographic. Great. But to your point, $65 in this time for a good card, but not like an A++ card, is a bit of a tough sell. So I don't think anyone's going to be like, oh, I'm so bored, I'm going to pay $65 for a UFC pay-per-view. There's plenty of other things that you'd want to keep your money for. So, yeah, that in its own right is a questionable decision, but they feel like they've invested too much to just give this one away for free.
Ariel Helwani here, and it's probably unfair to ask you to surmise the entirety of the UFC fan base in a simple sentence, but like, is there any chance that the fan base rejects this based on how bad of an idea it is, or will they follow dear leader wherever he says we're going to have Fight Club tonight?
I think that there are fans who are saying that, you know, I need the entertainment. And I think that there are fans who are saying this is weird and this is turning me off. I mean, it has been a very divisive topic. Again, the entertainment argument is a bit weird for me because, you know, I get it. You know, people want something to do, but like, this is not necessary. This is not essential, right? You know, when you're talking about a sport that would require a lot of medical attention, do you want, you know, doctors to be worried about fighters on that night, or do you want them to be worried about people who are sick? You know, so like, it's a bit of a selfish thing saying, I need something to do on April 18th. Like, I'm sure we can all figure something out. So the media has been very vocal about it. Obviously some fans, you know, Twitter isn't the best gauge for this sort of thing, but I've heard from fans who have said, you know, that they like it, that they don't like it. But the most interesting thing to me has been the fighters who have all said, like, where do I go? How do I sign up? I need the money. I don't get paid if I don't fight, all that stuff and more. And I feel for them because they're right. They don't. But a lot of other people, you know, don't get paid if they don't work. And so they're faced with this as well. And the worst part about it for me is not just the fight itself. It's the training for the fights. You can't train alone. It's not like you can go for a run. If you train for a fight, you need trainers there and whatnot. And so you're opening up that, you know, set of circumstances where you could be infecting other people who go back home to their families, etc.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous that they're doing it. I think it's ridiculous that they just tried to do a WrestleMania, and it just seems, you know, just what is the end game here? What is the purpose? It just it seems so short-sighted where there are officially bigger things that should have our full attention. Normally, when it comes to the UFC and a conversation about something crazy, it's more like this. How about this story today where a fighter who was a UFC fighter was laying in his bed and some guy broke into his home. And I guess if you're going to be a burglar breaking into any random home, you probably don't want to pick the UFC fighter. But apparently the burglar gave this UFC fighter everything he wanted and a little bit more. What can you tell us about this Anthony Smith story from over the weekend? I just clicked on this on ESPN.
Yeah, this is a wild story. I spoke to Anthony yesterday about this, and Anthony, in case you don't know, is one of the best fighters on the planet. He went 25 minutes with John Jones, who's considered the greatest of all time, a little over a year ago. And so he was sleeping in his home in Nebraska and woke up at around 4 a.m. to the sound of someone in his house yelling from the top of of his lungs, and they got into like a massive brawl in his house. He has three daughters. He has a wife, a mother-in-law who lives with him as well. And again, this is a guy who's really, really talented. He's a pro fighter who fought for the belt a year ago and said he couldn't put the guy away. The guy, he said, probably was around 165, 170, Anthony probably around 220, and the guy just would not stop. And finally, the cops came and they apprehended him, and he was taken to a hospital because his injuries were pretty bad. You can imagine what Anthony was trying to do to put him away. And then the story gets really bizarre because apparently, according to Anthony, the intruder's father went to the hospital the next morning and like snuck him out, like took him out of the hospital. And so that's truly bizarre as well. But thankfully he didn't get hurt. His family didn't get hurt. And, you know, all you could say is, you know, I guess that guy chose the wrong house, because I can't imagine what would happen if he walked into my house. I don't know what I would do in that situation, but he happened to walk into a top level MMA fighter's house and he paid the price.
I mean, well, but he also gave the guy everything he wanted and a little bit more. Sounds like a case of all hopped up on goofballs to me, and that's my professional analysis of the whole thing. We really appreciate your time today, Ariel. Thank you very much for joining us. What a crazy situation. What a crazy sport you're covering right now. We'll stay tuned. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Good to have him on, indeed.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.